Anyone have a first question for me?
I actually kind of have a question.
Yeah, good.
Sure. Yeah. Building off of what you just said, do you think that the reason that people struggle so much with that is because it's uncomfortable to them and they want to stay in their creature comforts? Or why do you think that happens?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think a lot of times people just are in the habit of being comfortable. So they don't feel I had a major breakthrough on a silly occurrence. I was doing my coaching calls, and a lot I do now around coaching calls or audio things that I used to not do, I figured out how to do them. But one time I had coaching calls and I had like 15 minutes. And for months, I've been wanting to clean out this credenza that's in our like family room. And it clicked in my head. I'm like, shit, I got 15 minutes between coaching calls. Why don't I see how much I can clean out of this credenza? And I started cleaning it and feeling really good about it because it'd been so long. It'd been an interference to the inspiration, intelligence, all that stuff that I have. And it was funny because I then started cleaning it while I was on my coaching call and started saying, oh, I could put this down on the credenza and have it on speakerphone, and then started using wired earpieces because I can do more. And now I can do more coaching calls while I'm getting shit done that's interfering with my inspiration. And I think a lot of people get in the habit of just being comfortable, and they're not thinking about, why not make a list of all the stuff that doesn't get done and do it while I'm doing the stuff that's scheduled. And like, how many people probably would like to have a balance routine or a stretching routine, right? Almost everybody would like to have it. Even young kids, when I say, on my son's football team, like, hey, do you guys have a balance routine or a stretching routine? No, but I should. Yeah, because I remember when I played high school and college sports, I really thought, man, I really should have at least a stretching routine. Didn't really think about balance as much until I got older. But do you know how easy it is just to do, balance and stretching stuff while you're doing something else? I could probably go through my entire balance and stretching routine while I'm doing a meetup if I wanted to, right? But that also could save my life. One fact hit me when I saw that the number one contributing factor to people dying when they're old is actually falling. That's what starts the shit. They fall, now they get sick. They can't, right? They fall, break a hip, and then they don't. And so falling's actually the catalyst to all this other stuff that occurs because they lack movement, nutrition, all the things that, God says is necessary. So it's really interesting. I started going, damn, I should have this balance and flexibility routine so I don't fall, because I know I'm going to live a long time. I don't want to fall when I'm 97 and cut short my mission of living to over 111. So I think we have to make ourselves comfortable doing other stuff while we do it and get in the habit of that. Because now I'm the opposite. Like, it drives people crazy because I'm like, whoa, I'm doing this. Like, I can't even go through what I went through this morning. Most people won't believe what I was able to do on top of what I normally do. Like, these guys don't even know what I did, because it's a surprise to them, but it was pretty cool. All right.
Hey.
Yeah. So one of the things I struggled with was basically allowing myself to do those things for myself that would catapult me forward. So, you have that time to work out, that time for yourself. And as a dad and a father and providing, I feel like socially, it's like you go to work and you take care of yourself, your business, and then you come home and you have dinner. And so it has to have this like intentional. So do you have any tips on how to get that beyond that thing? Like, I'm allowed to do that.
Yeah. So this is probably the biggest lesson beyond shifting the paradigm that I teach is non-negotiable behavior. So I start with what God makes non-negotiable for me, which is, I'm in this human experience starting with when my heart starts till the time it stops. So God tells you there's five things you need to do to keep your heart beating, because that's the only thing that determines the end of the human existence or the human experience. The only thing is when your eyes can stop, your ears, your nose, your mouth, your hair can fall out, your brain can stop, and you're still in the human experience as long as your heart's beating. So what does God say? Number one, breathing. If you don't breathe, he's going to stop your heart. If you don't eat, he's going to stop your heart. If you don't drink, he's going to stop your heart. If you don't move, he's going to stop your heart. And if you don't sleep, he's going to stop your heart. So for me, being practical and logical, I'm like, I think, you know, God gives me this human experience. Our God, your God, I don't care what God you believe in, but I believe in something bigger than me only because it's the best option. And I believe that which is bigger than me knows everything, is all powerful, all knowing, intelligent, intuitive, and inspirational. And to that measure, I believe it protects me, promotes me, loves and perfects me for one reason, because it's the best option. It's the best option of faith. So until somebody can tell me another option that's better than that, that's what I'm going to believe in. To that measure, my God, your God, our God says, these are the five things you got to do to keep your heart beating. I tend to think that maybe I should spend time being intentional about those things. So maybe my heart will beat longer if I learn how to breathe better, eat better, drink better, move better, or sleep better. This is literally what it is. So, and if I do that, I'm able to take care of everyone else. So I need to make a non-negotiable those five things. Now, I generalize them to people and say, 8 hours of sleep, minimum a day, non-negotiable, prioritized. If I have an exception to it, next day I make sure there's no exception because I don't want it to be a habit, right? It's an exception. I stack wins, not losses in my life. Drinking, eating, sleeping, then comes family as a non-negotiable. So when you start shifting this paradigm and utilizing non-negotiables, you have time for everything because you start realizing 90% of your success is in the 12 hours of non-negotiable behavior. And the majority of the 12 hours of non-negotiable behavior is sleeping, which is for the purpose of recovering and accessing what? Information, energy, intelligence, inspiration, intuition, to receive all of that so you can perform and react and respond to the circumstances that you can't control for the other 12 hours of awake time. But only 10% of that time, 12 hours of awake time a day out of the 16 hours of average awake time that you have will result in 10% of what you want. It just makes it more enjoyable, more interesting than the 8 hours of sleep and the 4 hours of non-negotiable behaviors on your breathing, sleeping, movement, drinking, et cetera, and your family, finance, faith, study of time and study of relativity. That's how I break it down. But I would say this is a really big point for people. They just forget about the 90% of where 90% of your outcomes occur. So they're so worried about what makes the 10%. It's just like in business. Like, I coach so many big businesses now, and even in big businesses, I was like, dude, 80% of your billion, I have a client of mine, $4.5 billion business. Aubrey knows him, actually. So does Nick. $4.5 billion business. That's a lot. That's, it is not Paycoff, who has, $14 billion? I don't even know. These are big businesses. 80% of their business would bankrupt them, and they don't even know it. Because 80% of most people's business, just like 80% of the time that you spend intentionally, is breaking you even or putting you at a loss. So if all you had was things breaking you even or putting you at a loss, guess what you are at? A loss. You're at a fucking loss. So why not dump the losers, work on building profitability with the breaking even or positivity or productivity, what breaks you even, and then focus in on the 20% that's profitable or productive. And so that's what I do with non-negotiables. I'm focusing in on the 20% that makes me productive, right? Sleeping, health, family, finance, fitness, faith, relativity, and time. And don't forget relativity, because man, this is the secret sauce of human existence is relativity. You give meaning to everything you see. And most people don't command their life. They don't co-create their life. Commandment means what? Working with God, 10 commandments. He doesn't demand. They're not called the 10 demandments. He's not saying you must do this. No, you command. I'm going to work with you, God, to be my best self, to, you know, not covet my neighbor's wife, not cheat and lie and steal and murder. These seem to be pretty bad things. My behaviors will create the outcomes that I desire. And you're giving me a divine direction with commandments.
Okay, real quick. Can you take like 2 steps this way, please?
Yeah.
Perfect. Just lighting.
It's cooler over here. My legs are like burning in the car. The shade, like the sun just was, we're in the exact same angle on the 5. It was burning my knees. Like, shit. All right, Aubrey. the king, queen of questions.
Yeah.
And I love it.
First of all, I just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
I go to another networking thing, and you always say, like, to be around people that, like, make you feel comfortable and make you feel like you, and, like, to get rid of the people that bleed you. And I've never really understood that, but yesterday I went to this meeting that I've been going for quite some time, and I felt really judged with what came out of my mouth.
Mm.
And I've never felt like that around you in your community. And I just want to say thank you for, like, loving me and accepting me for, like, who I am, but also, like, believing in me and actually, like, helping me. Because a lot of people will say that, and then they don't really, and you have always done that for me. So thanks for not being embarrassed of me. It means a lot.
Of course.
Yeah. I know I'm a lawsuit waiting to happen, but I think I'm worth the risk.
I'm a lot waiting to happen, but I'm worth the risk.
I'm a lawsuit.
I'm going to quote you.
I'm a lawsuit waiting to happen, but I'm worth the risk. And you're an attorney, so we're good.
Recovering, but yeah.
Okay, so my question is, when people come to you because they trust your knowledge, and they're obviously coming to you for your knowledge, but then they turn around once you give them your knowledge and they completely reject it and say you don't understand, and then kind of even like attack you, how do you handle that?
Oh, it happens all the time. So I think that's a really good point is, one, it's not what I say, it's what you hear. And I have no power to change you or for you to change. And you attacking me or you thinking anything about me is none of my business. What you think or what I think you think is none of my business. And so there's varieties of things that we have to do. One of the most frustrating things is to want something more than the people want for themselves. So anytime you're a coach, a teacher, a mentor, you're going to fall into, or a parent, which is supposed to be a coach, teacher, and mentor, you're going to fall into this trap that, why do I want it more than they do? When they ask me for the help, when they ask me, hey, can you help me? And then I help you, and then I want it more than you, and then you don't do what I say, or you reject what I say, or you judge what I say, then on top of it, you may even attack me for what I say. It's the same thing as trying to change someone. So what we do is, in a situation, is we offer to help. I usually try to have some sort of accountability. You know, I've been working through with my team, our networking group's growing. You've been a good part of it. And it's interesting because I curate the room by charging for the networking group, but guaranteeing it. And what does that mean? So I charge people to be there because I don't want people in the group that can't afford to be there. And I don't make it $500,000 to be in my group. It's, you know, less than $500 a year, but it's guaranteed. Meaning for any reason at all, you don't like my eye color, you don't like Aubrey, or you ran out of money and you need your money back, I will give you your money back. But it's not about, you said something interesting, trusting me. Right. And some of my guys were like, oh, well, you know, only two reasons you wouldn't do it. One, you can't afford it, which we curate the networking group for that reason. Or two, you don't trust Dave because he's guaranteeing it. It has nothing to do with trusting me. What it really has to do with is, one, I don't want people in there that can't afford it yet, because it's meant for people at that level that can't afford that amount of money and are willing to give value for it. Because two, do you trust yourself? Do you trust yourself that you're actually going to participate? Because people that don't join the group that can't afford it aren't, I don't take offense that, oh, I don't trust Dave's guarantee. It's they don't trust themselves that they're going to engage and participate. So I only want people in the networking group that are going to show up, help one another, know people that can help one another and show up to other stuff too. And so it's really interesting in this, it's the same thing. I lost a really good friend when I was young who ended up committing suicide when I was old because I wanted it so much more than him. And then he didn't take my advice and then was embarrassed about not taking my advice. Right. And I have no judgment. And so what other people think or you think other people think is none of your business. But you do have to understand you can't change someone and you absolutely cannot want it more than they want it for themselves. Has anybody heard of my paperclip philosophy? So it's one of my favorite things to do. people will ask me all the time for help. And I don't have the time to waste my time, but I do want to help everyone. And so if somebody said, hey, Dave, can you read over my business plan? Oh, absolutely. Send me a paperclip. Here's my mailing address. When I get the paperclip, I'll read over, review your business plan, and help you. Does that sound fair? 99% of the people who want me to read their business plan never send me a paperclip. So I have vetted out the people that I want to help more than they want to be helped, that actually will do anything about it. Because think about it, if you really wanted my advice, if you really thought I could move the needle for you, or that business plan is going to move the needle for you, it's anybody can afford to send a paperclip. Now, I've had someone send me a 3-foot golding paperclip all the way from Australia once. That got my attention, that they're truly someone that I wanted to help, because they did it. So think about your own way of making sure you hold people accountable, get them engaged, and have them send you a paper clip, either in essence or in physicality.
And so is that what you do? You just say, you just give them a task to see if they're serious, and that's how you end it?
Yeah, because most people won't do it. And then I'd rather them be ashamed and not waste my time than be ashamed after wasting my time. My friend.
Dude, so I've had a lot of people recently tell me to ask you for help, specifically tell me to ask you. And I've had many people that I've met through your community who have helped me and been very kind to me in some really difficult circumstances.
Good.
And it's kind of embarrassing, to be honest, the situation. But since I was a little kid, I've had very severe brain health issues. And my life's always been up and down, super chaotic, but somehow I made it work. And the last 3 years, it's gotten a lot worse. And I got divorced. I self-sabotaged all my businesses. I ended up homeless. I got really isolated. I dealt with every psychiatrist and therapist and experimental medication in California and Arizona and everywhere. And I didn't really figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to fight through. I want to help people. I'm trying to start a new business. And I just keep hitting the bottom. And last night, I was at the point where I was just like, I was really considering I just want to end it. You know, I was going to sleep last night in a broken down car that's going to get towed any day. And there's broken glass in it because some drug addict guy assaulted me the other night and threw this giant rock through the window. And I woke up this morning with 87 cents in the bank, and I was considering going to the grocery store to just steal food. And two friends out of nowhere, I didn't even ask them for anything. I just opened up my email, and they sent me some money and Venmo.
Yeah.
And it like just lifted me up, or like, I got to keep going. I got to keep like trying to do this. I want to help people. And Marco Antonio just called me out of nowhere and is like, he's got this opportunity to put this Super Bowl event together. And it's like, every day I tell people where I'm at, and every day I tell people, I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to give up. And it's like, I'm trying to build some really big things, but I'm doing it from nothing. And it just feels like ridiculous and impossible. And that's, at times, I feel like I can do it. And that's what I'm asking is like,
I don't
know where to go from where I'm at. For like,
so first, just without asking, I know you weren't. I've known you for a long time. I just didn't know the situation that you were in.
I've been embarrassed.
Of course. I know. So first of all, if ever you want to end your human existence, your human experience, when the heart stops, stop. You can call me, call a professional. Do not do anything else. The minute the thought, the words, the beliefs, the feelings come that you somehow don't think it's worth it, stop. You can call me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, call a professional. There's 800 numbers. So, you know, I've lost two friends. The one I talked about earlier on his 50th birthday hung himself in his garage. And John Brink is a good friend of mine, Emmy Award winning, family, every post I've ever seen, every conversation I've ever had with him, just like you, was super positive and he was super happy. And he killed himself a couple months ago. And he lost the struggle that you're having right now. So the first thing and most important thing is that when you have the words, thoughts, feelings, and beliefs that you don't think it's worth it, stop. Call me or somebody else, because that's not going to help. Two, it's great to have big dreams, but one of the things that I find that gives us passion, purpose, is to have something positive, productive, income generating every day. That may be small, just enough to sleep in your car and feed yourself. That's cool. 4 hours, you're way too capable, even with the mental dis-ease that you're experiencing right now. You're way too capable not to have enough for rent, food, you know, share a room, whatever. So, you know, lower the bar. So, you know, the legs feed the lion. And if your legs are weak, you can't feed. Your big dreams are great. Marco Antonio, myself, other people that have opportunity for you will be there while you're generating some income and feeling good about it. So those are the first two things that I would do. And I'm more than happy to help with both of those things. Does that sound fair?
No, I appreciate it. And you're right about the little thing, because that's, as I keep going through this cycle of crashing and getting desperate, it's just like Hail Mary pass every single time. Like, this is probably not going to work, but I got to just take a shot. And then it just digs a bigger hole, you know?
It's interesting for me, because like I said, I don't think people, I have really big deals. One's today happening, and like really big deals. They went from 6 figures to 7 figures to 8 figures to even 9 figures now. But I promise you, what I did today and every day, 7 days a week, including this, is lowering the bar, right? I did a free Friday training. I do stuff. I don't take $5 an hour, but I do stuff that other people charge $5 an hour for, in great humility. What's my favorite quote? You're either humble or you're about to be. And I take great joy in doing what other people don't like or love. I take great joy in loving what I don't love or like about what I love. I'm going to repeat that. I take great joy in loving what I don't like or love about what I love. I did it when I played football. I love football, but I learned to love what I didn't like or love about football. And there was a lot that I didn't like or love. I love my wife. I love my children a lot more than football, but I had to learn to love what I don't like or love about my kids or about my wife. That's just what love is. And so in the activity that you get paid for, let's work on learning to love what you don't like or love about what you're doing to get paid. Cool. You got it. Thank you for being vulnerable. And if you don't want that posted, you know, let Nick know. We won't use that video. Hey, buddy. Always good to see you. Even if there's a lot of traffic, you still love being here.
Even if there's a lot of traffic, yeah.
This is why I didn't do it at my beach house. Do you see the traffic to get to my beach house? It'd be like 2 hours.
Well, I understand. It gets hard for a lot of us. Just some commentary on the last question. I've been in places where I wanted to end it, and calling that person turned my life around. It's amazing the kindness that people extend you when you're vulnerable. And it may not be fixed right away, but give it time. It'll come back around.
Yeah.
People want to see you win. Well, one thing that I discovered on my journey is that I had a lot of negative self-talk.
Yeah.
Kept me in that endless loop, that downward spiral. The tool that I was given was journaling every day, every night, about those thoughts. And once you write those thoughts down after 30 days of doing it consistently every day, burn it. Those thoughts don't belong to you anymore after that. It is liberating.
Yeah. And that's something like for you, for everybody, like there's been so many people recently who've just done little, small, kind things for me. Not all of them are big things, but it's just like, it's just enough that it makes me feel like I'm not by myself. It makes me feel like I have, okay, gives me a little more time, a little freedom, a little bit of hope. And it just makes me also feel like I feel more responsible. Like they invested in me and they believe in me, and I can't give up. I want to keep Like, it just makes such a huge difference. Those little tiny things that might not seem like anything to me.
Yeah.
Like, hey, you're...
So it's interesting just to tie that in, because I probably know more people than most people that I can reach out to, that I have a bigger neighborhood of people that want to help each other, know people that help each other. But that's where faith is so important as well.
Yeah.
Like, when you talk about I'm not alone, you know, sometimes the antithesis, counterintuitive, when you have millions of people that know who you are, you couldn't even imagine what happens when you have a video, just one video, where 30 million people watch it. Like, it's unfathomable to think about what that does. What it actually does is it puts you into a semi-form of isolation. It's counterintuitive when it's so many people that you actually feel alone. And my faith is there that I'm not ever alone by a best option. I'm never, I'm a commander, right? I work with God. I have unlimited energy, intuition, intelligence, inspiration. What am I doing to interfere with it? What am I doing to interfere with it? And yes, those people that are in the infinite, abundant, unified system with me, it's a system of thought, which we give what commandments to, meaning to, relativity to, through our own freedom to give that meaning. So there've been tons of people who have given meaning to the situation you're in to get them to where they want to be or better. And there's been tons of people that have given meaning to the situation you're in to end it. Which one do you want to give?
And that faith aspect has been huge. Like, it's something I've tried to step into more, because a lot of times the stress is so overwhelming that it freezes me and I don't take the actions I need to take to put myself out of
it. Do it now, man.
But when I'm able to just be like, you know what? I don't see any way out of this. I don't know how I'm gonna get out of it, but I'm just gonna do my process anyways. Stuff just happens. Like,
yeah.
People, I didn't ask those people to send me anything. They just
faith is a predisposition. Intention is the disposition.
Yeah.
So too many people think that faith is the disposition. Faith is not going to do it for you. Faith is a predisposition which allows you to have intention as a disposition to do, say, think, feel, and believe everything you can in alignment with the divine direction that you're in, aligns and rearranges the detours into divinity and allows for divine time to reveal the truth that you are incapable of understanding or knowing, which is why most successes come from the place of there's no evidence, or the evidence is contrary to where I want to be, but yet I'm already here. Trust me. When I lost everything, there's no evidence that I ever would make it back, that anybody would ever ask me for a piece of advice, let alone about finance. I laugh every time someone's like, well, you're the frickin' expert in business. Unbelievable intelligence and financial acumen. Can you help me? I'm thinking, who, me? The guy who lost over $100 million? What? That's what's made me? See, that's when no evidence and the evidence is contrary, that you get and develop that complete predisposition of faith.
Once you stabilize, did you then design a new vision of yourself, or were you trying to get back to where you
were? No, it became directional, not outcome-based. So for me, I really focused and honed in on the behaviors that were going to get me to where I wanted to be or better. And I, earlier, before you guys were here, talked about my non-negotiable behaviors. I knew that directionally, in a divine direction, it was going to be the non-negotiable behaviors that were non-circumstantial, and to utilize sleep, my health, my family, my finance, my faith, relativity, and time as non-negotiable. So 8 hours of sleep on average, and then 4 hours of non-negotiable health, family, finance, faith, study of time, and study of relativity. That would create 90% of the aggregation, acceleration, and compounding of the outcomes that I desired. So in the behavioral intention, I had to have a predisposition that no matter what the outcomes were, that there was no evidence or evidence was contrary, that I was going to non-negotiably, no matter what the circumstances were, every single day, 7 days a week, give a minimum amount of time of attention and intention to those behaviors. And so I started with these five behaviors that we discussed, which was sleep, breathing, eating, drinking, and movement, because that's what God says you need to do in order to keep your heart beating. If those five things aren't happening, your heart stops, you're dead. You might as well go ahead and kill yourself if you don't eat, drink, sleep, move, right? So it just takes longer. So it's more painful, I think. So I started prioritizing behaviors and making them non-negotiable. Then once I got into the discipline of those non-negotiable behaviors, I started to practice the prioritization that we're talking about of the circumstantial behavior. So I became better and better at knowing what was important to me, who I could help, who could help me, how best to get it done with the incremental time, 24 hours, 12 of it being negotiable time, 12 of it being non-negotiable, non-circumstantial, but with the circumstantial time, knowing what I want, who I can help, who can help me, how best I can utilize that time in a divine direction by prioritizing according to the circumstances, not irrelevant of the circumstances. So interest rates, weather, arguments, whatever it may be, interference, I call it, whatever it may be, I'm constantly prioritizing what to do now and what to do next. I'm utilizing time because it's the only certainty that I know in the human experience, right? Because I'm guaranteed, everyone is guaranteed 24 hours a day, every day of their life, from the time their heart starts till it stops, except for the last day I'll be cheated. I'm okay with that. So I'm utilizing time in order to effectuate the divine. Divine direction, divine detours, and divine time. And that reconciliation of the infinite by shifting a paradigm and saying, I am. Someone brought up today on my training, my free Friday training, the people think it's woo-woo or arrogance or something or crazy when you say, I am God. And I disagree wholeheartedly. I think it's the best thing that you can say. I don't think there's any more humility than saying, I am God. What am I doing to interfere with it? I am happy. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am worthy. What am I doing to interfere with it? Even people I've been coaching for years still fall into that. People who work for me, Nikki and Colleen and Justin for a long time, they'll slip into me realizing they really don't get it yet, that paradigm of I am. They're still attaching, I'll be happy when. They're attaching to the outcome. They're putting their identity into how much money, sales, success, acknowledgement they get or whatever it is. That is absolutely irrelevant because what I want them to tell me is, Dave, I am God. Can you help me figure out what I'm doing to interfere with it? You got it, brother. Cool. Next question. Hi, Cooper. Don't cross your arms. You'll cut off your energy. Don't apologize. Just say thank you. He works with me.
Question I have is, I've seen a lot of your posts about how you can be of service to somebody, and you're basically offering, you know, your help. But, you know, I understand from your perspective, you've got a lot of experience. Maybe if you don't have as much experience, like, what's your strategy on like offering service, offering your help in circumstances?
So experience comes with time and attention and intention. So I only have experience at certain things. So part of helping people is building a community of people that I know want to help people. So if you have allergies, I am of no help, except for the fact that I probably know some of the greatest allergists in the world. There's more things I don't know than I ever know. I know that I'm here to learn lessons, but I'll forget every lesson that I've ever learned and ever has been learned, but I have the power to remember it, access it, remind it, recollect it, or remember it. And so no matter who you are, which is why this group of people that I put together, the curated group of people that want to help each other, even though on Mondays I give my help and I give my introductions, the real value is the thousands of people that I can say, oh, you know what? I know a guy that deals with mental health all the time. And if you need help, I'm sure he has great experience far beyond my own. Hi, Tyler. How are you? Hi, buddy. Good afternoon. Can you tell he's an Ivy Leaguer? Kind of just some energy that they give. Just makes me rejoice that all those Ivy League schools rejected me. They knew what they were doing. I want to fit in. Anyways. He knows. So thank you. So, you know, understanding this idea of your true legacy, the true power you have, is imagine surrounding yourself with people that want to help you and know people that help you. I would much rather be around someone that has no experience at anything, but knows everybody that has experience with everything, than someone that has great experience at one thing. Does that help?
Right. Yeah, I can add to that. I mean, I, for the longest time, was embarrassed, like when I talked to David saying, hey, I'm not sure I can help you, Dylan. So it was kind of sort of like a one-way thing. And still you realize that the point is that you are just a person in the network who could help somebody that David needs to help, right? And so it doesn't have to be a direct exchange, shared in four ways. As long as you're building your network, building your community and saying, hey, I might not be able to help you today, but I know somebody who could, and you connect then to let them get on with it. It doesn't have to be like a karmic direct
exchange. Yeah, and the better you get at having, one of the things I do really well is I have buckets and systems to help people. So someone calls me and said, I start looking for clues and patterns on how people and what they need, including meetups, right? I'm listening for what people around the world, 200 days a year, I'm giving an hour minimum a day, 200 days a year to do this. So I'm listening for clues and patterns so that I know, hey, there's a whole bunch of people around the world that have this problem. There's probably four of you in this small community right here who have had the exact same thought, actions in their life. Within this small little group. So I need to figure out, okay, what system do I do when someone says to me, Dave, I need this help. I'm thinking about taking my life. Then I have to create a bucket, a system, because I am not capable or experienced in helping someone that wants to take their life. But I do know that if I give them advice, when you think about it, you want to do it, you feel it, stop and call me, because I know what? I'll find the professional. So what do I tell people? Hey, man, just when you think about it, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you stop and call me or a professional. Well, what's going to happen when someone calls me? I'm going to listen and find someone in my network who knows what the fuck they're doing that can really help. Not me. I'm not experienced at that. And you're that same person.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the power of this community that Dave is built with. There's so many people I've already met. We don't know in that moment what that connection's going to be with. And one of the things I think I learned from David is to quickly sort of date with them in a way. And if the timing's not right, let it go for now.
Yeah.
But then circle back.
Right? Yeah. This is not the right time. When it is, let me know. This is not the right time. When it is. That's where the three no rule came from, right? I want to qualify to time that. I believe in intuition is timeless. So people in their interpretation of intuition think there is a man-made construct to it. And so it's terrible for gambling, but it's so true. Like when you're at the craps table, this has happened to me multiple occasions. I didn't understand intuition. So, you know, I got a calling hard eight, which means two fours. So I immediately bet the next roll hard eight, thinking that my intuition had a linear time to it. It doesn't. It's infinite time. So intuition is elevation of awareness that, hey, sooner or later, this is going to be important to you. Pay attention. There's a lesson that's coming from heart eight. Pay attention to heart eight. So when it comes four or five rules later or never comes, the lesson is in there. But instead of taking it and taking action in a linear way and relying upon my intuition, I'm actually relying on my intuition by elevating my awareness. And I say to myself, not at this time, but when it is, I'll let you know. God says the same thing, like, here's some intuition, not the right time, but when it is, I'll let you know. So remember, remind, and recollect what I'm calling on you for. Remember, remind, and recollect what I'm downloading to you. This is why sleep is so essential to me, because not only the obvious is recovery with sleep, which anybody that understands recovery knows, those people that recover better perform better, period. No matter what you recover in. Recovery creates performance. But what they don't talk about is access to the downloads, the intuition, the intelligence, inspiration, the energy that's infinite. And if you can learn to access that while you sleep, transcend it through meditation when you wake up, to elevate your frequency, your awareness, to make life easy, not dis-easy. It gives you the cheat codes while you're sleeping. It's a download. Best way I can describe it today in the vernacular of technology, AI, and kids kind of understand what I'm talking about more than I do, but it sounds about right. Thank you, Andrew.
So you were saying that I am God. So does that mean there's still a higher power than you?
Yeah. So there's an omniscient, that the higher power is the collective consciousness. The higher power is whatever form, name, identity you want to give it. But I believe in the faith of best option to live a human experience, that anyone that wants to live the human experience at its fullest, passionately, purposely, profitably, all things important in the human experience, that we have to believe in something bigger than us that protects us, promotes us, loves and perfects us more than your mom. And so for me, in this best option that I can't prove. So my philosophy of the human experience is during the human experience, I'm incapable of understanding or knowing something. In other words, we can't prove it. Then I'm just going to pick the best option according to where I want to be or better. Example, I fucking love life. I love living. I love life. So because I love life, the best option to believe in is there's multiple lifetimes. Like, it wouldn't make sense to me if there's no evidence or people can't prove to me if there's more than one life or not, why I would choose to believe in only one life if I love life. It's just a best option. I don't have to worry. I don't have to prove to you. I don't have to disprove to you. I just know that I love life and I have a choice. Believe in one of them or multiple ones. I'm going to believe in multiple ones until someone literally comes up with some kind of proof that's better than the best option proof. Same thing with God to me. Shit, tell me something to believe in. Give it a name. I don't care. But tell me something bigger and better than what I believe in for my life, which is there's an omniscient, all-knowing, all-powerful, intuitive, intelligent, unbelievable, unified, abundant system of thought that has more than enough of everything for everyone and is protecting me, promoting me, loving and perfecting me at all times. Even though I don't know it, even though it may appear to be punishment, I'm still looking for the promotion in when I lose everything, when shit doesn't happen that I want to happen, or it goes against what I think is going to happen. One advantage of being old is you actually get evidence that that's true. Like the shittiest things that happen to you are the catalyst for the best things that happen to you, if you give it the meaning that it's the best thing that has happened to you. That's the whole commandment thing, the co-creation, the collaboration, the commanding, working with God, command, not demand. Nobody's demanding anything of you. This is a commanding universe. We're working with one another. And yes, I do believe you have to believe to be protected, promoted, loved, and have faith in something bigger than you. And it could be collective. It could be individual. I don't really care as long as it's protecting, promoting, and it's that powerful.
I feel like people fall into an expectation trap, right? So they start out and they're going to start this new part of life. They're going to venture into something new. And with, you know, social media, how our world works, it's just, you know, reality. They're going to be an expert by week two.
Like a 19-year-old life coach?
Right, exactly. So when there's obvious processes and steps to mastery and people keep wanting to jump forward, how do you bring them back to reality without crushing them?
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's a fine line of pushing versus, I think he did something, push versus pull, but.
Yeah. So that it's interesting because I believe trajectory, direction are important, and it's very difficult for humans to understand the difference between pursuing your potential and attaching to your outcome. And so Bob Carson said it best to me, with was inherent in learning to love what you don't like or love about what you love. One of the best lessons of life. Those people that learn to love what they don't like or love about what they love, those are the people that never work a day in their life because life gives you their cheat codes. And so he's the one that said that to me. If you can consistently every day, persistently learn to love what you don't like or love about what you love in the pursuit of your potential. This is the social media side of it, right? This huge energy gap that's created today by I am versus this is what I want people to think I am. You know, I went to a wedding with a whole bunch of young kids that are on the internet and influencers. And I said, you know what's so cool about this? We were in Newport, Rhode Island. So you know what's so cool about this is like the Great Gatsby came from here, from Newport, Rhode Island. Right, the Vanderbilts, right? build all this stuff, you know, to want people to think I am. That's the whole basis of that era, right? This is what I want people to think I am. And they ended up broke, the whole legacy of the Vanderbilts because of it. But what was interesting is the influencers, they do the exact same thing on virtual and on video. The good news is they got nothing to lose, right? The Vanderbilts actually had money to lose. They're just posting shit that they don't own, standing in front of shit they don't own, telling people that they have experience that they don't have. At least they have nothing to lose. The problem is they still are doing exactly what the Vanderbilts did, is this is what I want you to think I am. And if you're living in the energy gap between I am and this is what you, I think I am, this is going to be a great interference between you and your potential. And so in setting forth expectations, I acknowledge I have huge expectations in a divine direction of where I think I want to be. See, my expectations each and every day are different of where I think I want to be or better. I don't limit myself either. It's or better. I just don't know what better looks like. And I know that. And so when I'm in the divine direction, now I'm giving meaning to the past, but it's the non-negotiable behaviors that make the biggest difference, because I really don't care. As long as I do my best, learn lessons, and have fun with the circumstantial behavior, I don't care, because I know I've already determined, really certain, that that is the pursuit of my potential. Sleeping, my family, my health, my finance, my faith, the study of time to be productive, accessible, and gracious, and my relativity. Like, I actually spend time being relative about relativity, reminding myself every day, this is all commandments. This is the meaning I give it. I give meaning to everything I see. So when my natural reaction to fear is one in a meaning that I don't want, need to be right, need to be offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful, worried, I spend my time studying meaning, going, hold on a second. That's a natural reaction to fear. I really don't give a shit what I'm afraid of. I wasted all that money on therapy, on personal development, on what I'm afraid of and the traumas I had, because I'm reacting to it. I know it exists. The body, the human experience, gives me an ego that reacts to it, puts my mind, body, soul in dis-ease, on fire. Now I stop, breathe, drop, ease, roll into where I want to be, my divine direction, creating this detour in its divinity as well. Remember, every problem and every struggle you have, the solution is already there. Same exact time. It's just a lapse of time between the problem and struggle and the solution. That's why they call it a resolution. It's a resolution to the problem or the struggle, because of the lapse of time that exists between the two that you create by the meaning you give the problem or the struggle. If you could actually elevate your awareness to every time a struggle or a problem came, that you knew the answer as fast as I say 2 + 2 = 4, there's a very short lapse of time between that problem and the solution, but that solution already exists. When I say 2 + 2 = 4 already exists.
Yeah, that was one of the key learnings that we got last year, I think, was that recognition of what is triggering that emotion,
right?
I feel fear, right? There's something else behind it. You can, through your training, shorten that gap, that you're not staying in that energy, but you're finding a pathway to get out of it and get onto the pathway you want it to be in the first place. That's really useful to study that.
Yeah, and I still study it.
Hey, it's not fear. Yeah. It's not worry. There's something underneath that always.
Take energy, right? I am not as good as, I'm not in as good a shape as when I was 25. I'm not the strongest, fastest person in the world. But I have more energy than most people on earth. Most people cannot keep up with me. Why is that? Because we all have the exact amount of energy. We all have the same amount of energy. I just have learned to spend minutes and moments interfering with it. Mentally, physically, spiritually, emotionally interfering with it. So where other people look at them, do body fat testing on them, strength testing, speed testing, breathing testing, all those things, they will kick my ass, except for they can't keep up with me. Interesting. Why? Because they're using all that superpower in the interference of the superpower. And that's the paradigm shift. That's the big lesson. That's awesome. All right. Next question. Yes. Hi. Yes, you can ask too. I'll charge you the same.
Thank you. I don't know if I'm going to ask this correctly, but my biggest struggle, you know me now, is what people think. So like when Alex talks about his money, I don't think anything of it. That's his life. When you talk about like who you know, I don't think about it because that's your life. But like, so I had an experience. Well, I have a lot of experiences like this, but people ask me about myself or they're like, oh, all you do is post the celebrities and blah, blah, blah. That's the life I'm trying to live. I know you can't change that and it's done your business and all the fun things, but I literally go home and dwell on it because I'll tell them and then they'll make like a negative comment and then it makes me feel like shit.
Ah. Good. So yesterday,
no,
go ahead.
My point is how do I change me to not care because I really care?
Well, first of all, you can't not care. Right? So when people make fun of you, scoff at you, tell you can't do something, it creates fear, and fear has a natural reaction to it that creates resistance. So you actually will always have that fear. Yesterday, some guy did a collab on me, on my Power of 64, you know, twice as efficient, twice as effective, twice as statistically successful, paying, you know, having 16 hours of activity, twice as efficiently and twice as statistically successful, creates 64 hours of productivity in one day. So he takes what I said, cuts it off, puts me into Grant Cardone's camp, makes fun of me, right? He's like, oh yeah, 10X this and blah, blah, just talking shit about me, which is so fucking funny, to be honest. In fact, some of my friends were in there laughing and maybe at me, maybe with me, I really don't give a shit. But my first initial reaction to the fear that you hurt my feelings. I have a need to be inferior, a need to be superior, a need to be separate. Basics of fear. My initial reaction was, because my child sends it to me, right? Sends me this collab of people making fun of me. My initial reaction is the same one that you have. It hurt my feelings. And then I stopped, dropped, thought about it, and started saying, this is funny. This is funny. And man, that's being shared a lot of people. And I looked in the comments and my wife looked up and goes, hey, look, a lot of the comments were like, I wish they would let this guy finish. Even though they thought it was funny, I'm sure. But they said, hey, I wish they would let this guy finish. Because what he showed wasn't what I was saying. And he, you know, tried to, you know, make fun of it, which was funny, but I gave it a different meaning. Did I make a different meaning immediately? Did it not hurt my feelings? Did I not instantly get either pissed or scared or whatever reaction it is, feel bad about myself? Yeah, for minutes and moments. And then when I got into ease, I commented going, hey, brother, this is super funny. Would you mind coming on my show? Because I'd love to learn more about how you're so funny. And people love the comment. Because what he thinks of me is none of my business. But I sure learned a lot about me, how quickly I can get back to center. And I didn't waste any energy by attacking him or just acknowledging what it was, which was just pretty creative, pretty funny. And I like to participate in your humor. And, you know, it's like that book. And I'll take one last question after this. My favorite story about this book, you're handing it for me. It's like, and if you already have the book, grab one so you can give it to a friend. So we don't want to take it back home. I write this book in 2013. Goodreads is the number one digital. Amazon books is just becoming like a really big thing in 2013. Amazon reviews are super critical. Number one book on Amazon. My first review from Goodreads, which is the biggest reviewer on Amazon, was a woman who said, this book, or David Meltzer's an idiot. This book is stupid because he says that you can talk to water and change the molecular structure of the water. Now, that was actually from research, and I agreed with the research. It wasn't really an opinion. It was, hey, I read this research about you can talk to water and change the molecular, because it was about frequency. And I, by the way, I definitely believe that. Anyway, my very first review in this book, now there's been thousands, was one star from the biggest reviewer. My reaction was exactly the same as it was yesterday. But I didn't spend minutes and moments in it. I cried. I told my wife, holy shit, I wasted my time. My book's a failure. No one's ever going to read it. No one's ever going to buy it. I'm screwed. These were what I felt. And then what happened was people started to comment. And all the comments were, I want to read this book because I believe you could talk to water. And it, this is, so what occurred was, and what helped sales in this book was the people that would have read the book and read that part of the book and said, Dave Meltzer's an idiot, never read it. So I got no more negative reviews because this lady resonated with those types of people and she protected me from any of the people that aren't going to like my book from reading it. But what happened in the protection, promotion, love, and perfection that I never imagined were all these people that never would have read my book defended me because she insulted them. And they're like, you know what? I'd like to read this book. This guy believes in what I believe in. I want to hear what else he has to say. And they all bought it. And all of a sudden, five stars, referring it to their friends and friends. 8 books later, I don't even care because there's enough people that know my frequency that no matter what I write, they're going to want to read it. Thank you, everybody, for being here.